Hi, my name is Michael Poley, and I've never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer. My friends are obsessed and always make jokes and references to it, and so now, 20 years later, I've been convinced to watch the show from beginning to end, one episode a week. I'm a Buffy virgin. Hey everybody, I'm Michael, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. We watched Season 1, Episode 7, that's the Angel episode of Buffy. And with us, I've got Dr. Travis Frog.
Hi.
Dennis Dennis St. John, cartoonist.
Hey, good to see you guys.
Kara, a writer and Buffy enthusiast.
Hi.
And John Landis, a school teacher.
Pork and beans.
This is the most people we've ever attempted to have on the podcast, so hopefully this will all work out. But great callback, John. Really appreciate that callback to the most bizarre part of the never kill a boy on the first date episode of Buffy. That was great. I'm ready for Buffy trivia. As if there's a Buffy trivia night that only covers season one up through episode seven, I'm ready to go.
You're totally ready.
So I'm going to try to describe the first act of this. At any time anyone wants to interrupt me to discuss things, that's great. I'm going to just describe more scene by scene as opposed to just a general description of the act. And then I'm going to stop, and then we'll get to Act 2 and Act 3 and so on. So this episode is all about Angel, finally. This feels like a non-filler episode of Buffy. Just kidding. Nothing's non-filler. The setup for this episode with Angel, we get to meet the anointed kid, who's from the episode where Never Kill a Boy on the First Date. You know, we had the big surprise at the end of the episode was there was the kid on the school, not the school bus, but the airport shuttle bus was the anointed. Also, Darla is back, and the three are called, and it's very ominous that the three are going to go after Buffy. You know, we've had the one, then the three. Then the next scene, we get to meet the three. It's not a group of skinheads. It's, in fact, a group of guys that look like they have time-traveled from a Mad Max film into the Buffy universe. And then we get to go to the Bronze. Apparently, it's the fumigation season for the Bronze. It's the one time a year when they fumigate for cockroaches. Buffy is crushing hard on Angel to Willow. She's so obsessed that she reads as bored to everybody else, like just totally out of it. Buffy goes home. She's followed by vampires. It's the three. She's possibly going to be overwhelmed. Angel intervenes and saves her. They escape together to Buffy's house. Vampires apparently can't come in the house unless they're invited in the next scene here. And so Angel ends up staying the night at Buffy's house, despite Mom's protestations. And it's a very interesting... I wanted to discuss this all in more detail. This is just very generally. I want to keep moving. Then we're back to the library hang zone, where we learn that Angel was a perfect gentleman. You know, it was... They just made out and he stayed the night. No big deal. And then the three have failed on their mission to kill Buffy, and so they're all killed by Darla. And so that is kind of the end of Act 1. And then Darla says she has a plan to kill Buffy. So that's kind of act one of this one. So it's a lot of things happen in this act. It's very, very busy. I was surprised that the three were killed so quickly. It seemed like they were going to be an important part of the Buffy universe. These awesome guys with these rad costumes.
I wanted to make a joke about their costumes being that they used to be the six and that they all went in for one big suit of armor. And like now it's only the three left. The guy with the helmet died first and the guy... collecting the people who shared pants died next, and now we're down to just these guys.
Are you wearing a Parappa the Rappa t-shirt?
I am. My friend JP Kuvert designed it. It says it's all in the mind.
Isn't it more, wait, that guy's from Parappa the Rapper and Umjamalami? He's the one character that's in both?
Yeah, he's the Onion Master.
Yeah.
He taught us we live in the Matrix.
That's right. There's a dojo in my mind.
This is like an extra dose of 90s nostalgia when you get to wear that shirt. That's great.
Wow.
I feel like this episode was like two episodes in one. Like you have the first one where it's like the three, which should have been a bigger story. It almost feels like the master is like Rita Repulsa from Power Rangers and she's just sending monsters every time. And it's like, oh, this time I have the three. They'll be able to stop them.
Kara, I literally wrote the exact same thing in my notes that the master is Rita Repulsa. Because the master is like never involved in the action, always like in this separate space, and it's just like foiled again. Mm-hmm. Like,
I wanted to ask Dr. Travis Frog about killing the three. Darla kills the three by stabbing them through the back of their neck into their heart. And I just wanted to ask, anatomically, is that the easiest way to stab somebody in the heart?
I gotta say, there are far easier ways to stab someone in the heart.
Even if they have chunks of armor?
Ooh, I guess if you have armor, then you gotta go where you gotta go.
Random
I mean,
pieces
yeah.
of armor.
Yeah, yeah, it depends.
If penance is death, like, what can they possibly learn? What a waste.
How pathetic are they that they know they're going to be sacrificed, and they're like, oh, she made it home. She's tagged safe. Like, this isn't tag. They could have burned the house down. Like, if your life depended on it, you could try a little bit harder. They let the mom in without any trouble. She was a perfect hostage. They they gave up
easy.
They've lived a long time. Yeah. They were like, this is our last go-round.
This is the last job. This is the last job they do.
They wanted to die.
And then they retire.
Yeah, one last heist, and then it's easy speed.
They thought it was Fast and Furious, what, 5 or 6? I forget which one was supposed to be the last job. Oh, this is our Fast 3? And Furious. Yeah, 3.
That would be a rad, weird Buffy fan movie to do a longer story about the 3 and kind of what their lives were like leading up to their sudden death. Oh, hey, there's a Dusty Smith in the audience. Dusty was going to play guitar or pinball while we were doing the podcast, but he decided to not interrupt. What's up?
May I add a quick comment?
Yes, please.
Since you guys are all about nostalgia here, just for nostalgia's sake, I'd like everyone to remember that the big heist in the first Fast and Furious movie is that they were stealing an entire truckload of standard def DVD players. That was the big heist.
Thank you, Dusty.
I never saw the Fast and Furious movie. I'm a Fast and Furious virgin.
What?
Oh, well, there's our next podcast.
Hey, I have a question. Like, how does, like, are you still a Buffy virgin after watching one episode? Like, is this just this ongoing thing of, like, every week, same casting characters, you lose more of your virginity?
Every episode's new.
It's a slow, it's like, Mike. like losing your virginity. It's a slow burn. Like it's...
Well, there's first base, second base, third base, you know, things accelerate. Seven complicated bases. Yeah. I was thinking we'd actually have people on that had never seen Buffy and have them watch whatever episode we're watching. And that way they get the total noob perspective as an ongoing phenomenon. Because I was talking about this podcast last night. And by the way, people can't help but spoil this fucking show whenever I mention something. I was talking about this podcast last night. And it's like, oh, yeah. I was mentioning it to this guy, Ryan Price. You guys don't know him. But anyway, I was like talking about watching the Angel episode. And he's like, oh, Angel's great. I love that show. Cordelia's a great character on that show. I was like, Cordelia's on that show. You know.
But you gotta stop talking. People are the worst.
I gotta not mention this podcast. Like, so, part of my, I cannot promote this podcast because people keep spoiling this.
First
show.
Rule of Buffy virgin.
Yeah. So let me. So for me, for the first part of this, you know, I'm going to start off in saying this is the best paced Buffy episode. This is the best mix of action, the least amount of research, and this episode, the bad guy is flipped a couple different times, and so that's why you're right. The first act is what normally would fill a whole Buffy episode, and so I love this episode because it's the first episode that really just is action. It's exciting the whole way through, and there's a lot of action. And so, you know, I think I wrote down, I think it's like the first, so Buffy's in the alley fighting with the three by 4:30 into the episode. And we've never gotten that fast. The big three were supposed to be the big bad for the whole episode. By 4:30, she's in there fighting.
Right, they didn't do any research on the three.
No, you didn't. That was beautiful. Yeah, you don't need to research when they attack you in an alley.
So this episode was written by David Greenwalt. I think it's the first episode he's credited with. And he's the co-creator of the Angel series.
And he's also co-creator of Grimm.
That's right. I looked him up, and Grimm is his only other real.
And it's, right
now. I think he also did Teacher and I think, as well. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
Oh, he did. Okay.
Okay. And then I think we're. We're up to Buffy. This is Buffy's first kiss. So this is Buffy's first kiss with Angel. Happens with Angel. Yeah, with Angel. It happens within. I think it happens within like 6 or 7 minutes. It's really quick. I mean, this episode, the first act is just
amazing. It's a long kiss.
It's
heated.
Also, I want to bring back that there's no ramifications from the episode The Pack, because Buffy, Xander, and Will are all hanging out like nothing had happened. Poor Principal Faludi never happened. That poor mascot, the pig, never happened.
Yeah, I don't think there's a principal at the school right now.
Yeah. Anyways.
I wanted to talk also about Angel being shirtless, because it's the first shirtless Angel.
Yeah.
The first of many,
first
I hope.
Shirtless Angel.
And just, it's really striking to me how hairless he is and how fresh that tattoo looks. If he's supposed to be an immortal being, why isn't that tattoo faded?
But no sunlight, though.
That's true.
It's not going to fade.
But
thank you, Dr.
Is it weird to anyone else just how hairless he is?
Yes.
It's not especially weird. I mean, we all know he's, I don't know.
I didn't think it was weird either. It just felt like 90s boy toy kind of vibe.
It felt like he was on like a major network television series and they forced him to shave his body.
Maybe it's just a thing of like, I've watched David Boreanaz for years and I've seen him shirtless many times. Even on Bones, he's shirtless every now and then. And I've never seen him. He shaves his armpits. Like, he's just totally hairless. I feel like it's weird.
I think that's his dress.
Well, not to diverge too much, I watched Cruel Intentions last night, and Ryan Phillippe, shirtless, is pretty naked. Like, not too much extra hair on that boy.
Smooth. Like a baby doll.
should we move on to Act Two?
I have a thing I want to say.
Sorry.
Not actually, this is stupid, we'll probably cut it, but I do have questions about, since this is the first time that they brought up that the vampire can't go in your house if they're not invited. You gotta ask about the limits of that, right? Like, what if I'm like running from vampires and I hide in my house? If the vampire like gets in a like gets in a wrecking ball machine and like smashes the walls, will he still be like limited to where the walls used to be? Or if my house is destroyed,
I think the house itself is the sanctuary. If you destroy the house, you're free.
Okay.
Yeah.
What if what if a vampire is like trying to eat like a homeless man who's like sleeping in a box? Can he go in the box?
No, it has to be like a true structure.
Well, what?
No, I think I like the cardboard home that defends. That's like a safe space. Like, I would love to see a teen movie where the kids run and hide in a box. And they're like, let's make this our home. Quick, decorate.
What if you're like a nomadic person? Like, if you're a Bedouin, and can a vampire go into your tent? If you're like,
that's the gray area. But I think in that case they couldn't. I mean, it's all supernatural, like magic, because there's an episode of Angel where, like, it's not like,
no, listen, Mike.
You just can't walk, like there's an invisible wall that you cannot pass into a house. Like, it's totally magic. So
in this episode, that wall doesn't seem to exist because they're able to reach their hand into the house.
Yeah, so they evolved that. I think that a yurt or a tent,
or even a teepee,
I think that would all qualify for sure.
Now, side question: can a vampire enter another vampire's house?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
it only applies to humans. Doesn't apply to demons or vampires.
Well, like,
I think it's one of those abilities. I want to talk about the master a little, but I can do that at the end of the episode because this was the first episode I got to talk to you guys about where there's actually vampires.
Yeah.
And I know he's not the most liked character by Mike from listening to the first podcast, but I wanted to defend him a little.
Oh, good. Yeah. He's pretty boring villain.
There's a great line in the first act where Angel goes, my whole family is dead. And then Buffy immediately goes, was it vampires? Like, no, it's nothing else. It's like, was it vampires?
And I also like the look Angel gives then, where he's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Because he knows he's going to have to explain that he killed his family later.
Did anybody else?
Oh, he really killed his family? I couldn't tell what's really going on in that scene.
We need to have a summary of what he tells, what we, I
what we know
from that.
Angel now would be
great. Yeah, as of now, like, what we know.
There's a lot of weirdness.
I also wanted to, I watched this episode on DVD and then while watching it the second time on DVD, went to the Netflix to look at differences. And the bedroom scenes are lit totally different in Netflix than DVD. I think that maybe starting this episode brightened certain scenes.
Definitely.
I'll tell you what happened if I had a second. They put a filter over the camera to make it appear like it's nighttime on the original. And then somehow, when they went back and redid it, they took that filter off.
It's weird. It's not blue anymore.
Yeah. So that's why it they filmed it during the day, but they put a filter to make it look like night, and then they effed it up in...
Which, if you're watching this on Netflix for the first time, I think creates a possible visual confusion about Angel being in direct sunlight.
Again, the podcast recommends you watch these television show on DVD.
Yeah, the framing is also differently. It's
way
it's
better.
Cut in, it's cut closer and stuff.
Weird. Oh, yeah, yeah, better, yeah, the framing's all screwed up.
I'm only watching it on DVD now.
Yeah.
I'm not bothering with Netflix.
All right, good call.
I did have a couple first comments on the first act. I feel like it's kind of like the introduction of like Buffy's relationship, like, oh, I'm missing a boy. Oh, but I also really like this Angel, but how is that going to work? And it kind of creates this arc for the first act, and that's all that's kind of carrying it. I feel like it doesn't actually begin, like, Travis described this as the first compelling episode, and I agree, like, it's the one that, like, really draws me in, but it doesn't draw me in until, like, the halfway point, until you get to Angel. Like, it should have been more developed, like, you know, how is she going to manage this relationship? Like, more, like, thought to it, and also, you know, something more compelling with the villains, the three.
But Kara, I mean, who do you think the real villain is? Is this, like, a Whedon thing? Where he just keeps switching up the villains till you never know? Is it, oh, the three is the villain, oh, Angel's the villain, oh, Darla's the real
villain? Well, I think they would have... Was that the thing? I think they would have developed, like, the plot, like, okay, so you get to the second act, and, like, suddenly there's this element of, like, oh, vampires are animals. They're, like, they're not human. And Angel is trying to pretend to be human to get Buffy to like her, to become, or pretend, sort of. Like, that's what the implication from Darla seems to be. I feel like they didn't establish that early on. So, like, it's later on, it's like, oh, Angel is trying to be human. Angel is pretending to be human, trying to, like, enjoy a living life that is not all undead and tortured and everything. And that seemed to come out of nowhere, almost. Like, I didn't realize that's what Angel was kind of going for.
Well,
I agree. I think I've thought about this before, of how much better the twist with Angel would have been if the previous episodes with Angel worked mm-hmm. better. But I mean, it's just a problem of season one.
Yeah.
That we...
No, I think it's...
Angel is not well represented in these first few episodes.
I think if it was season two, they would have separated it. I think they do in later episodes kind of have a better, a little bit more control over the character arc, over the story. But like, so the first, like, 10 minutes, which is its own little mini episode, has really no arc other than Buffy likes Angel, and Angel seems kind of into her. And vampires, and House, and Joyce, and all that. And then the second episode, in this one episode, seems to be about Darla and Angel, which is a good thing to kind of work on. I think that a lot of the motives kind of suddenly come out of nowhere. Like, at the beginning of the episode, Darla's like, oh, let me kill them, let me kill her. And then it's like, oh, I'm going to visit Angel now, and I'm going to talk to him about his, like, how he should come back to being a bad vampire. And then, oh, it's, like, it kind of changes again, I think, in the middle, trying to convince him that he can't have that life with the humans or something like that. And I feel like they're all good feelings, but, like, all good, like, emotions for the characters and, like, character development. But it feels like it suddenly comes out of nowhere towards the end. Like, this is what this episode is about. It's about Darla wanting Angel to be bad, and Angel not wanting to be a vampire anymore. And, I mean, on some level, like, at the end, like, he wanted to die. He wanted Buffy to kill him instead of being a vampire, instead of being the animal.
This feels like the pack to me, where they go to so many dark, interesting places, and then they try to pretend that they didn't, and they sum it up into, like, a different ending than what really happens. It's I mean, maybe movies always do this, where they're like, oh, cool, and the couple gets back together, the end. That was cool, right? Like, this is ongoing thing with the Archie universe of Buffy, where it's like, they do this dark stuff, they have these really crazy the Angel Darla story is really, really messed up and interesting, and it just doesn't get the handling it deserves at the end, and it's really disappointing. Anyway, can we go into that a little bit more? Maybe just talk a little more through the episode before we get to
we'll
it.
Yeah, we'll talk more through the episode.
That's kind of what the episode's about. But I love your read on it, Kara. Like, just how how divergent these sections are. Like, there's so much story, and it does none of some of it is maybe just doesn't need to be there. The three, let's just erase the three. That's not even interesting to me. Like, that never goes anywhere. Let's just talk about the Angel Darla. That's the story.
How are the
Angel Darla Buffy triangle
than the Order of Aurelius? It's basically the exact same thing again, right?
I mean, it's like a slice and a sprite. I mean, yeah. It's like what. They're both summoned to kill you, but, you know, I don't know.
We need another vampire gang.
A little bit more vampire.
One had armor.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wait, didn't...
What armor?
Super,
one more...
super effective arm armor, which a vampire totally...
Didn't the Order of Aurelius have armor too, or did they have something else?
They had special rings.
They had cool rings too. They had armor and rings. Also, this episode has a great quote. the quote is, "Hunk can mean a lot of things. Bad things."
I also wanted to. Joyce seems fairly cool with like an old man being in her house with her teenage daughter.
Totally.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a parent of a teenager, but that just seems so weird to me that you'd be like, "It's getting late."
Yeah.
Also, all the lights are off in the house.
Like, why aren't you like, "I'm calling 911"?
It would be so much less creepy if they played it. If she had played it like. You know, oh, she's just fooled. Oh, she really believes that he's a tutor. But the way that the actress plays it, it's like, oh, I know you're making out in the back room, and I'm kind of like, that's, you know, not okay, but it's okay. Like, that's really weird.
She has this great knowing smile at Buffy. And I'm like, Joyce, you are really cool with this situation because Angel looks like the definition of effing trouble, okay?
Even if he wasn't a vampire, he'd be,
just
an older guy with a leather... Jack.
Way older guy.
Joyce just wants
her
to be a single
guy.
Mom like her. You know, they're just doing the setup.
Don't make the same mistakes. Yeah.
Well, unless, yeah, it's like there's nothing I can do. So the next act two is starts with this really fun, silly crossbow training scene where, Giles trains Buffy on the quarterstaff and says that she needs to be patient. And then it's just really funny. I'm not going to be fighting Friar Tuck line that, like, I watched this twice and I laughed both times.
He's
really
a Robin
fun.
Hood enthusiast.
I'm a Robin Hood enthusiast.
As a Robin Hood enthusiast, don't you think the line should have been Little John?
Yeah.
Yes, but it felt like it's in the universe and like it's kind of the stupid, like it's not the smartest reference. And I think that's what made it funny. It's like a not smart Robin Hood, but you get the universe reference. But yeah, right.
So I did a quick, this is my 30 seconds of Googling for this episode. Is that...
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
This is John with 30 seconds of Googling.
this is my recurring segment. So I really wanted to find out if there was any fan fiction where Buffy does get to fight Friar Tuck. The only Robin Hood Buffy crossover fiction I could find was this story called Merry Meetings. And it's supposed to be longer, but the person only overwrote the first two chapters. And it's mainly like Buffy's like, oh no, I'm in Sherwood Forest. And then Robin Hood's like, listen, men, you can't molest this girl. She's off limits. And that's the end. That's basically as far as it gets. So there's no fight
think,
with Friar Tuck or Little
Sheriff Tuck. Probably would have been a vampire. prediction.
I think Mike needs to take this and run with it.
It's a wide
well,
open
I think the obvious
thing
answer,
fan fiction author.
Yeah, man.
So.
The obvious answer would be to have Buffy investigating a supernatural crime with the Sheriff of Nottingham that leads her to find the angel-like Robin Hood and fall in love.
Well,
I mean, that's obvious.
See, you're already
Robin
is
Hood.
Angel Robin Hood this entire time.
That's it. That's it, baby.
You're already way ahead of Paula Rose forever, Mike. So
is
on that.
Well, this is an alternate universe because Angel would be much older to be in the Robin Hood universe since he's apparently only 300 years, 270 years old, right? Robin Hood time is like 1400, right? I have no idea. When's Robin Hood time?
Was it like the year 1000?
It's during the Crusades, right?
Yeah, it's during the Crusades, allegedly.
Okay, so we got like a 300-year window for Robin Hood times. Cool.
The Master was around, but...
So after the crossbow training scene, we're back at home. Apparently Angel had been there all day reading Buffy's diary. Oh, no, wait, he wasn't. Buffy has this funny explanation for how her diary is not a reflection of reality. That's the hunk line that Travis Frog mentioned. A doesn't even stand for Angel. It stands for Ahmed. He's a charming foreign exchange student. that made me laugh too. That was great. And then after that, so there's a Buffy Willis scene.
That's when Buffy and Angel kiss and he turns into a vampire. And you're the one saying,
sorry.
Talk about testosterone, dude. You're right. Got a lot of testosterone when you're kissing a girl and you turn into a freaking vampire.
Right, it's a creepy kiss, and his escape is hilariously weird, where he crawls out, crawls down the roof. Like, that's a man's in a hurry. And then Buffy screams, Mom shows up, she makes up an excuse or whatever. You're right, the now we know for sure Angel's a vampire. And Travis
least
made a
shocking twist of all twists.
So I knew this, but I didn't exactly know. It wasn't 100% confirmed. Now it is 100% confirmed. Angel's a vampire. So I was like 90% sure. That was.
If we're talking about this scene, sorry to interrupt, but what's like Buffy's logic for him being in her room all day?
Yeah.
Like, the internal logic is that she can't go out during, he can't go out during the day, but like, is he so afraid of the three? She can walk to, like, the mom probably goes to work. She can walk to school, and he's still like hiding in the closet all day. Like,
I was wondering that.
Angel's a creep. And he needs to spend time looking through Buffy's clothes and shit. Like, you're right. There's no reason for him to still be there.
Is vampire
fans... And animals like corners and hiding in closets. Like,
yeah,
cats.
No, I think the vampires are supposed to be cats, right? As far as animals go.
Yeah, that's what they mean by animals.
I mean, yeah. Homicidal, sadistic, anything. Kind of into S&M. Maybe not the last part, but...
Wait, is vampire face like having an erection? Because it just, like, they're kissing, and then suddenly he turns into a vampire. What's the causal factor there?
I think it's the metaphor of, like, yeah, of it being an erection. It's like his human face is something he can control, but when he's too passionate, he can't. It's the same reason later on he, like, right. can't help but monster face around blood. I think, what's her name? Stephanie Meyer definitely watched this episode and wrote her entire Twilight series based around this episode. Like,
yeah, I was going to ask that. I have not read or seen any of the Twilight stuff, but is the idea of a vampire and a high school student having a relationship, does that exist prior to this? Because it feels as old as the hills to me, but that's...
I bet it does, but I mean, the Twilight is so clearly Angel. I mean, that guy, Robert Pattinson, even looks like a better drawn version of Angel.
I think there was a Jim Carrey movie where... But he was the girl and the vampire.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess in a way, like, the first vampire fiction is Carmilla, which is about, like, a teen girl being seduced by a vampire. But that was before high schools.
You know, I would say, you know, this is not internally consistent because later on, this doesn't actually, I don't know, he doesn't turn into a vampire just around, like, this scene. This is just, like, a one-off... We need to tell you that Angel's a vampire situation.
Well, he probably gets used to making out, and it doesn't cause quite the blood flow to his head anymore.
I don't know. Yeah,
been a long time. Been like 100 years. So.
Well, as far as I can tell, he's never made out with a Slayer before. So, I mean, it is the first time. Maybe that was the first time jitters. But, you know, it's just for the viewer. It's not really that internally consistent. That's what frustrated me, but whatever.
So now, after this, we go to the Buffy-Willow scene. We've learned Angel's a vampire, and she's wearing... I know we've got time for random stuff later, but Buffy's wearing a snowman shirt. The snowman has a bow on it. It's really childish and shocking that she's wearing that. It felt like she's wearing clothes for a 12-year-old. So anyway, she's learned that he's a vampire, and of course Xander's jealousy says, you know, he's operating in full effect. He's like, well, you gotta have to kill him now. That's too bad, huh? Anyway, you gotta get rid of this guy. And which is exactly what he's wished for this whole time. And then the next scene is an Angel and Darla scene, which is very interesting. Darla's dressed as a Catholic schoolgirl. Apparently she dressed in kimonos before, and reveals this crazy history that Angel and Darla have had together. They had a relationship, something in Budapest. There was an earthquake.
Turn of the century.
There's a weird quote from her. Is there anything better than a natural disaster? Like, I have no idea what she's talking about. There's just this wild hints of this crazy past together. We also see that being a vampire is extremely sexual. And that Angel might have an additional curse beyond a traditional curse of just being a vampire. Yeah, and then Darla's like, I want to be your sloppy seconds at the end of this. She's like, hey, if things don't work out with Buffy, come find me. It's a very weird scene.
I'll tell you this. Life is long when you're eternal.
So after the scene, we're back to
vampires
the library.
Vampires ain't got no dignity. That's what... I think there's something
that's a quote
I mentioned
Angel.
In an email to you guys, because I wasn't here for the first podcast, that the very first scene of the series with Darla, I think she's supposed to, like, the viewer the first time is supposed to maybe think she might be Buffy, because she looks more like movie Buffy than TV Buffy does. So I think there's something, like, we're confirming here. She's dressing in this, like, almost, like, exaggerated parody version of a schoolgirl trying to imitate Buffy with, like, the bleached blonde hair. It's really, it's very unhealthy. she's totally losing her identity to this pale imitation.
I thought there were two things going on. One was this, I mean, we have to remember, in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the first two people you see, the only named character is Darla. I love that. That's super important still. And then I think, I can't tell if Whedon was making her look like a high schooler just to blend in with the rest of people, or to put you off guard, because you find out later that Darla is Angel's sire. So she's not actually the youngest vampire. She's one of the oldest vampires. And I can't tell if they're just playing off expectations there for a long time. But anyways, this scene is great,
right,
between
and she,
Angel
she
and
made
Darla.
Angel, right.
I find that this scene is great because finally Darla has some freaking personality. She's strange. She's sexy, sexual. She's kind of, I don't know, to her, she finally has some good lines. You can finally see Angel kind of like be a little bit wishy-washy, like understand that he's trying to do something kind of weird, live with the humans. And then she's like, I'll be there for it. I don't know. I think it's a great scene between the two, and I'm glad that Darla finally got some good scenes in so far.
Well, it is the most interesting vampires talking to each other scene that we've had. Like, vampires mostly been like, go,
that wasn't campy.
Destroy!
That wasn't like, oh, here I'm full of vampire makeup, and we're underground, and kneel before me sort of situation.
The first scene where you actually have Angel by himself and not with Buffy or not with the other characters.
Yeah.
It's his first own scene, and he shares it with Darla.
Then the next scene here is in the library, and we can talk about all these scenes again. Giles we're learning that Angel has a history and it's written down. he's the Angelus character with the angelic face. Did he get a tattoo on his shoulder? Yes, exactly. He's 240 years old, and he spent the last 80 years shunning vampires for some reason. And we don't know why, but, you know, Giles says, like, he's in a book. It's kind of funny that these characters are so old and that they're known. And we almost know exactly how many kills they have. Like, all that stuff's recorded. Stuff that probably is not being recorded now.
You know, he calls him a monster, but he says he's like all of them. He doesn't really describe Angel as being, or Angelus as being, like, the worst vampire they've ever faced, right? Like, he's kind of a run-of-the-mill vampire. He's fairly young for a vampire, which I feel like later on, as the series goes on, they treat it differently. They're like, Angel. I looked up, because he's from Ireland, and they called him Angelus, so I'm guessing, like, that's Latin? Because I looked up Gaelic for Angel, and it's just like Angel. It's not Angelus. So I don't know why the Irish would be calling him that.
So the big problem for Buffy right now is, like, the second she's discovered Angel's a vampire, she's supposed to kill him. I know, because there's an Angel TV series, that's not going to happen. But, like, that's what she's supposed to do. And everybody, you know, Xander's very happy about this, because this means one less person to compete for Buffy. like he was ever in the running. And then Giles is on the side too of killing Angel. Like, yeah, you know, he's a vampire.
Yeah, he's
got to do.
Giles is in full Peter Cushing mode this episode. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's Van Helsing. And I think he also gives some really great exposition earlier. That's like sets up exactly what vampires are in the Buffyverse, about them being like demons inhabiting a human's body and kind of imitating them, which is like its own myth. I mean, that's the Buffyverse myth of vampire, right? It's something they've kind of created, and they did it really quickly. They just did it during like a walking, talking scene.
So next scene, Darla asks to kill the Slayer. Darla wants to set up Angel to kill Buffy. That's her plan. We sort of understand it, but not quite how it's going to be pulled off. And you know, the master is like, yeah, okay. You know, reluctant, but okay, go ahead and do that. And then the next scene, Buffy is in the library. She's studying Civil War Reconstruction era with Willow. And, you know, because everything is about her love for Angel now. Like, oh, I wonder what Angel's life was like when he was alive during the Civil War time. Like, you know, there's just a funny, weird, but, you know, story about history. And Darla is watching them study, and sees Buffy eventually resolve to kill Angel. And this makes it seem like Darla's, like, her plan is something that was going to happen anyway. So Darla's like, I'm going to make, you know, Angel kill Buffy. And then she goes to the library and it's like, Buffy's like, yeah, I guess I got to kill him. So it's like, she didn't do anything to bring this about, but is, I guess, going to take full credit for it when it happens, is how this reads. So then Darla goes next to Buffy's house. She's, mom is drinking late night coffee in the kitchen. Darla says that she's there. She gets invited into the house. She's going to hang out and wait till Buffy gets home to teach her history. And then Darla follows mom around, and, you know, she's about to eat mom, or she has a bite. And then Angel shows up. He's wise to Darla, what she's up to. And then there's, I don't know how this happens, but somehow, you know, Angel ends up with Joyce in his hands. And, you know, when Buffy shows up, it looks like he's just been taking bites of mom. And then we cut to Buffy kicking him out the window. So there's no moment to explain. Angel gets kicked out the window. She calls 911, and we take mom to the hospital. And I think this is kind of the end of Act 2, right? Where it's like Angel, you know, we've seen him now, the vampire he really is. At least to Buffy, the vampire really is. Even though he's trying to save Joyce from Darla. So this is kind of fun. I enjoyed this act a lot. If this could be the whole episode, that'd be great. I like the premise of loving a vampire that you then have to kill. That seems like they could keep this going for an entire season. It seems like a serious problem.
I like the Joyce scene. I like that the shot begins with her in front of knives. I like that Darla talks completely in vampire talk the whole time. Like, not subtle at all. She's like, my family's from around that time. I want to bite you a little. Like... Like, that's not normal schoolgirl talk. Like, coded vampire talk, just barely coded at all. And yeah, if Angel could just control himself a little more, he wouldn't be in this mess. This is classic sitcom. not being able to explain problems.
I like your, Mike's take on Buffy and how suddenly, like, everything is about Angel, like... and I feel like the other side of this is everything for Willow is about romance and other people's relationships. Sort of like, oh, shy people are just obsessed with other people's relationships and what they're going. And they just want to hear more and more details. And kind of this sort of take. I feel like maybe feminism comes into the later seasons or something. I'm not sure when Joss Whedon found it, but...
I think you found it.
Yes. First, it was like, oh, a really strong girl that can kill vampires. That's different. And then maybe eventually. And then, oh, I don't want to give any spoilers, obviously. So at this point, we'll just say that's where his feminism.
And I also wanted to point out, like, that Willow is tutoring right now. Like, a lot of her early relationships with people are her tutoring. So she's not even like, it's a tutor first and a friend second. It's like. There needs to be some sort of subservient quality to her friendships.
I want to point out what bad friends everybody is. Like, everybody feels like they're really bad friends. Like, Xander, I feel like Xander especially, and I think he does it even more later, but, like, Xander is, like, a really good example of why having a crush on somebody makes you a bad friend to them. Like, everything he says in the entire episode is motivated by how much he wants to get with Buffy to the expense that he doesn't care about her feelings at all. That's obviously keeps happening. And then even Willow is like, you know, when you're going to have to, and then she does this stabbing motion with the pencil. It's super callous and creepy.
They're high schoolers.
Yeah, I guess they just don't know how to have feelings.
It's okay prop.
That's probably true.
I also thought it was weird after Buffy found Joyce that Xander and Willow just walk into their house. Like, was that planned? Like, or are they just like, we're walking late at night. Let's see what Buffy's doing. I don't know. I just needed more explanation as to why they popped into her house at night on a weeknight.
Yeah, that is a weird scene. There's a lot of characters in this scene for some reason. But because Willow and Xander already know that Angel's a vampire, it's like okay for them to be there now. Like, it's not a reveal. But it is weird that they have to be there. But I think it's important. They need that because then there's less. I mean, this is the narrative excuse for it. In the next scene, you know, we learn eventually that how the setup worked, that Darla was the person that got into the house, and Darla, you know, is the person that bit Joyce and not Angel. And that it's important that Willow and Xander also believe that Angel is bad versus them trying to excuse him. Willow seems like she might be the most ready to forgive, I guess, Angel. And so, I don't know, just like the weird, it's a little convoluted how this kind of logic works out. And I think that's the narrative excuse, but it's silly. So in the next scene, we're in the hospital. The doctor says, it looks like you got stabbed with a barbecue fork. not teeth. Like, what's going on here? She's like,
I actually wrote that down of Dr. Frog. Are the doctors in Sunnydale covering for vampires?
Ooh.
They definitely are. No one gets stabbed in the jugular with a barbecue fork.
They just must not have the insurance for it, which is why they need to come up with these stupid excuses.
We can't say much about it, but we already know there are problems in the hospital in Sunnydale.
Mm. Well, wait, no, but that does beg the question, Dr. Frog. If someone came in with those symptoms, what would your assumption be? Like, in the real world, where, you know, you're probably going to be reticent to believe in vampires, somebody comes in with those symptoms, what would you say?
Oh, no, I totally believe in vampires.
I would call for my immediately life. Stab this man in the heart.
What I would do, I mean, it's a clear, you'd probably call it a pseudo-vampire bite. I don't even know what you'd call it. You just call it it's a clear bite. There's clear blood. I mean, it's just TV. You know, it's just funny.
So wait, if I do ever stab myself in the neck with a barbecue fork, I should not come to you because I'll set you
don't come to
on
me,
like a rampage.
I will start the town out looking for Angel.
and if you do go to Dr. Frog, be sure to tell him I didn't feed. It was.
Is that why you won't is that why you won't use your real name in this podcast?
No, I look for
so
Darla.
That, like
I
actual vampire victims won't be afraid to come to you.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, we're off the rails. We're off the rails so much. But I love how they gave her iron. I love every scene with Joyce, by the way. Joyce is amazing. I love this episode. It has a lot of Joyce. She's just a great actress.
Yeah, for just a barbecue fork, I mean, whatever the prick, that's more than a prick.
It's a gag.
There's like a lot of like blood getting infused into her body. So the hospital scene, then we have a Darla Angel scene. Angel's being asked to accept who he is. Meanwhile, Buffy is running around, like on a ladder. She's doing some private investigation, trying to find Angel. She's got a crossbow with her.
Oh, my favorite scene where she uses a crossbow and shoots the smoking sex poster. Amazing.
That poster is so weird.
That poster is genius. She shoots the smoker in the heart.
Yeah, but like, what's the point of that poster? He's a good-looking guy smoking because smoking sucks. I don't understand that poster at all.
Yeah, it's smoking.
Nothing to understand.
It's just smoking sucks, and it's a blood-sucking joke, and they throw in a steak joke. I don't know.
In a vampire context,
that poster was weird.
I think that poster is going to be your version of that poster in The Shining that creates a whole conspiracy theory.
That's it.
Did you know there's a Minotaur?
Did you know that Joss Whedon directed the moon landing?
I did not.
I just say he directed like a SpaceX.
Tell me more about how this poster proves it.
That's where John Glenn became a vampire. He's not really dead. He's just had to disappear because they're like, he's too old. He's a vampire.
So in the next scene, Giles learns the truth. While Buffy is going after Angel, Giles learns that Darla is the person that was invited to help Buffy study. And we always assumed it was Angel. Turns out it was Darla.
No, we knew it was Darla. The other people didn't. The cat, the Willow, Xander,
and
Giles
Buffy.
Thought it was Angel.
They thought it was Angel. They assumed it. You know, we hadn't heard a gender of the person who'd been invited into the house. And meanwhile, I love Joyce's interpretation of everything. What a great school. Everyone cares so much about everybody.
Oh, this is a drink because this is the very first incidence of Joyce's selective amnesia. So that's definitely a drink.
Poor Joyce.
Gosh, everyone has selective amnesia. Xander has selective amnesia about being a part of the pack. It's great. So then we're at Angel's place. He has this amazing bachelor pad with a pool table.
He's actually at the Bronze.
No, that's the Bronze.
Yeah.
Huh? It's at the Bronze.
Yeah, it's fumigation night. Yeah. That's why it's empty.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
There's those
Which I wanted to ask if everybody was being poisoned by gas during this entire fight scene.
Well, the vampires. they're dead already.
But if it's it's the Bronze, why is there blood in the fridge?
No, no, there's the basement. Those are two separate scenes.
Mm-hmm.
The pool table thing
is the same set. Sorry.
No, no, no. Yeah, it just looks, his Angel's apartment looks a bit like the Bronze. Yeah.
He's got like an industrial apartment.
Yeah. It's got industrial feel. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's why one was in the warehouse. I just assumed it was both places were his house.
No.
Right. But, okay, so it's the Bronze where the fight sequence takes place. Okay, got it.
David Boreanaz totally ruins this scene because he doesn't know how to act yet, apparently. He's so Keanu Reeves in this episode. Like, he's just like, do you have any idea what it knows, what it feels like to do the things I've done and to care? Like, and you're just like, I don't think you know what it's like to care. I don't think you have any idea.
I think I heard that David Boreanaz was found by the casting director walking his dog on a street. And that's how he got the role.
So we heard this story.
Oh, wow.
That was a season one, episode one story from Buffy Virgin.
If I can go back.
And it was prefaced, trying to say, well, everybody knows David Boreanaz was discovered.
See, Kara is a true enthusiast. She knows this stuff. She has. So also, I'd like to correct myself. That first episode, I said this is airing in 1999. It really is airing in 1997. I screwed that up. The first episode. I'm sorry, guys.
God damn it.
Travis. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for all the listeners.
Fucking Christ.
Listener of one. All right, Mike, sum up the rest of these. Okay, so sum up all the rest of the scene so we can just talk about it.
Okay,
so
then not at Angel's place, but at the Bronze. Angel has a tell-all with Buffy. He says he killed his family and their friends.
That is at Angel's place.
Okay.
Sorry. It's not important.
In a dark room that looks vaguely cool and 90s.
Yes.
He says that his soul is gone, he has no conscience and no regrets, and that's what a vampire is like. Buffy offers herself to Angel, like, offers her neck to bite, like, she's so deep into Angel, it's like she's testing him, maybe she's gonna stake him if he goes for it, and he doesn't. And then Darla shows up in another, a completely different schoolgirl outfit. She confesses her old love with Angel, and how she made Angel, and then she has guns, she puts out two guns to Buffy's crossbow, which is a super fun and intense scene. Buffy hits, misses, whatever. Angel ends up killing Darla in the scene. And then we cut from that scene to the master freaking out. And then back to the Bronze post-fumigation. Cockroach problem has been dealt with. And Buffy shares a dance with Angel where her cross burns through his skin because they hold each other so close. So it's like they're going to be in a relationship now that Darla's out of the way. So that's the episode. So,
yay.
But that third act is really messed up. Like, the fact that Angel killed Darla was shocking to me. I thought they would come up with some other resolution out of this. Darla seemed like an interesting ongoing character to battle, you know, with Buffy for, you know, Angel's love. But turns out, she's done.
Oh, and I don't know if you noticed but the Buffy Virgin Instagram is now following Darla, the actress, Julie Benz.
Yes, yes.
So, woo. We can see more of her on Instagram.
But not you.
Do you think that Darla would have been a better big bad than the Master?
I like the Master.
Okay, I know you're feeling.
You're the only one.
Oh, please tell us why you like the Master, Dennis.
Yeah. All right, is it time?
Yes.
Okay, I just think, all right, well, first of all, he's based around, like, the Nosferatu design of vampires, which is, like, totally my favorite vampire design. The issue with it is that the first guy who did it, Max Schreck in Nosferatu, is, like, so clearly the best that it's really hard for everyone else who does that kind of design to live up to. But I wrote a list of people who have done it well, Klaus Kinski. Like, every Guillermo del Toro vampire is some version of that.
What wasn't Peter, the original Dennis? Wasn't the original Nosferatu? Wasn't he an actual vampire? That German guy.
Willem Dafoe did a good Max Schreck and whatever that's called, Shadow of the Vampire. But I just think I think this guy does a decent job. I think the makeup is great. It's really weirdly textured, and instead of looking like a rat, which usually they go to, he looks more like a bat face.
Agree.
And I think, like, one of the interesting things about season one when they're trying to figure things out and stuff, I mean, I wrote down Rita Repulsa also, and that is a big problem, but I think it's neat that, like, they exist in this fairly contemporary world. I mean, it's contemporary to the time. And then the vampire master exists in this entirely other universe, really, that looks totally separated and is like gothic crumbling churches. It looks like, I think it's that clash of like old horror meets new landscape. And instead of being like, instead of the horror adapting, it's the clash is that it doesn't adapt. But I think then the actor does a good job of playing it weirder. Like he does, like he's a weird actor. He has like weird choices and some of the lines are goofy. And him having a kid sidekick who's like, they're all against you. Like, like it's petty and it's weird.
It ups the weirdness factor. I think,
just think it's more of, it's a weirder monster than Buffy does. Like after the master, they try to make the monsters more contemporary and stuff. And I just think he's such a like creepy throwback character.
I love the look of the master, but I think my problem is that there's nothing driving the season with him. He's just more in the background, kind of giving commentary, doing his own little thing. And eventually this is supposed to build up to something. He has the anointed one now, but yet he sends the three to go kill Buffy. So apparently the anointed one has nothing to do with Buffy.
Well, the anointed one's just a dumb kid. I think it's interesting also that the anointed one, we know the prophecy is she shall lead the Slayer and the Slayer will not know him. Right? But like, so they know that she will face the anointed one. So he is throwing everybody at her knowing that it will fail if he believes in this prophecy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and
so that's kind of dumb of him.
I have a couple angel quotes I'm not using right now, but they involve prophecies. so I think for this, I think going back to the master, Dennis, I think I do actually like this. I do like the master. It takes a while for it really to get going. To me, the master, of course, is, we know that they are old. He is old, many, many, many centuries old. You eventually learn the phrase that he's evolved beyond the human visage. We can just say that because obviously he's always looking like a vampire. So so he kind of acts like someone from an older time, which I think they send their minions to do their bidding. I know you guys are talking about this Rita Repulsi or whatever they're called. But I'm not sure what they're called.
Don't pretend you don't know what Power Rangers is.
I don't know the name. I know maybe the first. Anyway, so I think they're just sort of like, I think the master's just acting pretty appropriate for someone who's been around for 1,000 years. And back in the day, Yo's royalty, the rulers, they sent minions, and usually the minions were pretty reliable. In this case, I think the master would be more successful if he were able to leave the church he was trapped in and get shit done himself. But he's just limited to minions, and you can't get good minions in Sunnydale, apparently.
I kind of think of the master as being like global warming, where it's this giant problem we shouldn't ignore, but on a day-to-day basis, we can totally ignore it. Like, and we do, and we don't. We pretend it doesn't exist.
That's a good analogy.
But in the end, it's like a bigger disaster than we're really ready to deal with, right?
I like how we haven't talked about John Woo, but
yeah, John the John Woo reference. Oh, yeah. Totally a John Woo reference. Yeah,
crazy, right?
Yeah, double guns on the pool table, somehow gliding on the pool table.
Well, it's Buffy push the pool table.
Buffy does push the table, but it's
not motivating.
Totally a John Woo. This is
like.
And totally, like, they built the entire Underworld franchise around this scene, where they're like, vampires with guns.
I mean, so much was ripped off of this
wow, this episode.
This season, or this episode,
Underworld,
yeah.
Twilight
and Underworld.
But it is interesting that they're guns, because there's so rarely gun violence in Buffy.
Yeah.
It brings it to this.
It's so insane. I think when they bring the gun violence, when gun violence happens in the world of Buffy, it is insane. This episode
proves it. Not
to
spoil anything.
Okay, so the big themes this episode that I'd like to talk about is the Angel, Darla, Buffy thing, because it's all motivated by the fact, by Angel and Buffy, but also mostly by Angel, because Angel is a total mess. He's attracted to 16-year-old for reasons completely unknown. He's her mysterious
guardian. I think
guardian.
You know, you watched Cruel Intentions yesterday.
Yes. She's a hottie, so he's into it. But he's 300 years old, she's 16.
He's
he knows this is a big mistake.
Yeah, total creep.
Yeah.
Total creep. And, like, Darla's dressing like a schoolgirl, also trying to motivate that same thing. He wants a younger girl who's less experienced.
Well, she's making fun of him, right?
Yeah.
Right. She's not doing that to do it so much as she's doing that to mock him.
Yes and no. I think he's saying yes yes, to make fun of him, but also like, hey, if that doesn't work out, come and hook up with me again.
Well, she misses him. It's been, you know, 80 to 100 years.
But his motivations are completely unclear. Like,
he's an animal.
He is such a bad actor that you can't interpret a single thing in, like, what is really going on here. He's so flat. Like, Buffy's into him. He's handsome. He's mysterious. Cool. I guess that explains it. Why is Angel into Buffy? I don't know. Because young. Like, it's like a pure sexual desire. Cool. I get it. Is it anything else? Probably not. Can't possibly be. They've spent zero time together. So it's all sex. But it's such a strong desire for him to have reclaim that sexuality. And I don't know how old he was when he turned. Maybe, you know, because I think there's a little bit of arrested development.
Well, he certainly looks less than 30, so.
And so, yeah, like he's a freshman in community college, right? So when he turned, so he could still date 16, sure, why not? And then...
Just under 30, right?
And then he's totally willing to kill Darla for it. Like, that relationship is meaningless. Like, it seems like they slip in on each other's lives and some, you know, I get Darla's going to kill Buffy, right? So he has to make that move. But
he does just walk away without any emotion, probably due to his bad acting.
but there's excellent acting.
He doesn't really
Maybe that's how the scene should be acted, Mike.
Angel is a creep. That's what this episode should be called. Angel the Creep.
What?
I love Travis's role as the guy who always defends.
I will defend this scene. I'll defend weird prop work till the day I die.
We need that. We need it.
I would say for this, the concept between Buffy and Angel, right, is that it's this cosmic thing. It's either love or it, because many women throw themselves at Angel. We see this in the TV series so far, aka Cordelia, who is an attractive woman,
right?
It seems, right?
Right.
It
he
seems
puts a spell on all women, except
yes,
for Willow.
Xander is certainly attracted to her. Angel couldn't care less. So,
did you say Xander? What?
Xander's attracted
to Angel?
No, wait. No, Xander's not attracted to Cordelia. That's right. That's right. Although Xander did call Angel a very attractive man.
So
he's attractive. He's a very attractive man.
I mean, I feel like what's happening here is that, like, I mean, everybody points out that the Buffy-Angel relationship is kind of inappropriate. Like, Buffy kind of says it herself. Angel says it himself. They all say, like, I'm too old.
Oh, yeah.
And Darla points it out. Buffy's mom points it out. But it's just sort of a thing that we just have to get over it. I feel like that's what the episode is kind of trying to say to us. Like, it's sort of like how the Bronze is totally a bar for teenagers. It's just part of our suspension of disbelief. And we can make, like, little jokes about it, but we're not really meant to take the idea seriously. And, it's weird. I find it super creepy that Angel is attracted to Buffy. But I think in order to watch the show, for better or for worse, you just have to let that one go, I guess. Which is weird.
All right. I was going to talk about how I think Angel's attracted to Buffy because she can kill him, and it's that death.
Oh, well, that sounds way better. You should still say that.
All right. Then I just said that.
I feel like when we get into the second season, we'll need your sister to talk us through the Angel-Buffy relationship, John.
Oh, yeah. I told her that I was doing this podcast, and she was like, that's totally unfair because you made fun of me for watching Buffy when I was a kid.
You did?
You call it out, though. You do talk about that, John.
I did. I know. I told her. I owned that a little bit and whenever we recorded that. I don't know if it made it to the edit, but...
It totally did. We want that moment here for sure. A lot of this is just getting it on the record, printing the transcripts, and then sending apologies.
So the other piece that was cool here was that we learned more about... I mean, like the tip of the iceberg for the Angel history. You learn a lot of stuff, but there's a lot more that happens as well. And I hear it with, you know, I always forget this, but like there was this plan for Angel to rule like the whole world. If the master, you know, really was able to achieve what they were to achieve, like with Darla. So like, you know, Angel technically really gives up all this power by killing Darla, by going against the master. So in that sense, like, you know, I think that's a cool concept. I don't know. And none of the Scooby Gang really addresses this. I don't think they ever really get it, to be quite honest, this season, that there was always this possibility that literally they would basically rule this guy, Angel, would rule the world. But anyways.
Oh, yeah, I guess it's an interesting thing. The master thinks he's supposed to.
Other things happen, and we're not going to talk about that. But this is like a first... What I don't think is really apparent is that... Angel was a big deal as a vampire.
Well, the Master is the one who tells us
this. The Master is a huge deal as a vampire. Darla was a huge deal, and Angel was a huge deal. And I feel like this episode, there's too much to say. So I just don't think they address it, but it's interesting.
I was surprised how big the vampire body count was in this episode.
Yeah, no humans. We also didn't do a body count. It's all vampires.
Oh, yeah, four vampires died, none killed by Buffy, one human injured, and no school attacks this episode. So the school is safe for a week.
It's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer episode where four vampires die and none of them are killed by the Vampire Slayer.
So one of the things that we can throw on the website is bar charts. So if you can give me you can just do the episode so far of the deaths. I can make a chart out of them, Dennis.
That's a good idea. I'd love to keep a track of how many people die at the school overall as the series goes on. Like
for what it's
just
worth,
get a track of what like
you can do. I mean, you should totally do that. I think it's a valid project. That data is already on the Buffy Wikia.
Oh.
Not necessarily in a convenient form. I mean, you have to go to each episode and like scroll to the bottom and get the body count, but. It is.
Someone else could pull that for me. That'd be great into like a spreadsheet. Are there any other themes that we want to talk about from this episode?
I think we all agree that child profit evil things are still genuinely creepy.
I had more notes about lighting differences between Netflix and DVD, but I think we kind of got over that. Like,
yeah.
Well, then after themes, we discuss. It's just random things. So
I actually don't really find the Anointed One creepy. I find him boring. He kind of, you know, he's this weird Mr. Smithers in this episode for the Master. He's this just totally like a yes man for the Master. And the Master himself is not that threatening because he's filling the Skeletor role, the Rita Repulsa role. And it just feels like, I don't know. Like, I'm not given a reason to care.
Skeletor would be pretty creepy if he didn't have such a funny voice. Creepy design. Very creepy design. I was thinking about that the other day. Like, he had to have had that silly voice to not be too scary for kids.
But
cartoons.
That design is not...
He's a muscle man skull face with a ram head.
That design isn't creepy on Power Rangers. And I think that's what I thought of when I first saw this episode in, like, the summer of 97. I was thinking, this is like Power Rangers. And it's stupid. And, like, at the time I was in high school and I was interested, like, I saw the trailer for Pi and I saw Dead Man by Jim Jarmusch. And I think I read Edward Albee's Zoo Story that summer, like, right around the same time that I was watching this. And, like, a Clive Barker play about the devil that I saw. And so all this weird stuff. And, like, this seemed boring. This seemed like kid stuff. This seemed like the opposite of like what I was interested as a teen, which was like madness and truth, probably, which is probably what most teens, or at least half teens, I guess, the other half maybe likes this. I don't know.
The Owens.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to contain a lot of truth. Well done. Yeah. Like, it doesn't. It's not a true depiction of how humans actually behave and what they actually do and think. And I totally connect with that. I did not watch this show at the time, obviously. I was really into Ernest Hemingway, Stephen King, you know, literary fiction that seemed to be about truth that, like, this does not get to. This feels like...
I started watching this show originally. I have a very distinct memory of watching the very first episode and having to talk my brother into, like, watching this with me because... At the time, I was really into, like, MST3K, and I liked the original Buffy movie as something to make fun of, and I was like, this will be funny to laugh at. And that first episode, the very opening scene, I remember being like, whoa, this is so different than I expected. This isn't campy fun. And it pulled me in that way. Hmm. So, if that makes me a less intellectual high schooler than you guys, I read Hemingway also, but probably only because Mike did. I don't know.
The first episode I saw was The Pack, so you might understand why I didn't watch it again.
Oh, the one thing I want to comment about this episode is, I think we alluded to this, that, you know, Buffy and Angel is not like an over thing, like, you know, but honestly, when I saw this ending to this first episode, I'm like, oh, this is a one-off. Like, she kisses him, he gets burned. We're not going to address this again because we've never addressed anything significant that happens in any of the other episodes before then. So I have no idea why. Oh, it's only the fact that I've seen the rest of this, but there's no, when I watch this episode, there's no expectation on my part that Buffy and Angel will ever be a thing again. Like, to me, it's not, like, super clear. They kiss, they make out, okay, they're high schoolers. He gets burned, she walks away. I mean...
He can't get that close
to her. We haven't even talked about Jesse. We're the only ones freaking talking about Jesse, dude.
Yeah, no Jesse's one cares dead. About Jesse.
Dude, who's... I mean, this thing's really going to last another episode? I don't... So, I think the show kind of falls down because they've set, like, the bar so low with continuity in some ways. So, anyway, I thought that was funny. When I watched that, I'm like, oh, I'm right there with you, Mike. I'm frustrated that it doesn't seem like anything matters episode to episode. And I wasn't changed. I watched this end, and I'm like, oh.
Well, I like the way that it ended, where it's like, you know...
you this, actually like the way it ended.
Well, no, where the angel's chest is burned from the cross. It's like, it's the clear reason why they can't be together, right?
Their love
he's a vampire.
Yeah.
And love hurts.
Closer well, I mean, you get, the closer you get, the more you get hurt.
But I mean, some people would say together, that cross stands why did for he something kill Darla? That... Like, they have to get together now. Like, it wasn't worth killing your former lover and sire to get with a 16-year-old. Or it's just impulsive sexuality, like, run rampant. Kill anything to get, you know, to get and protect, you know, this new potential sex object. Because they have no other relationship.
I mean, I don't know how... I don't get that read. I see more of a star-crossed lover read than pure, like, sex animal read. I mean, don't know. Yeah, from those two people, from Xander and anything that moves,
well, they have a boring Twilight relationship, yes. I mean, like, he sleeps on the floor and they kiss, you know, before that happens and she changes in secret. But, like, it is a more boring relationship for him to be spending... You are right, it is... I made a mistake. Maybe it's more traditional. But it's, like, the motivations have to be so supremely sexual because they haven't really...
Or
they're star-crossed lovers, and it's true, you know, it's destiny. I mean, it's a prophecy. How boring. Yeah,
not totally. Prophecy, but so sex is generally less boring. You're right, but I mean, the relationship doesn't have to just be sexual. I don't know.
I think what Mike's saying,
you're seeing this hypersexual.
Buffy hasn't done any things around Angel to justify his attraction to her. So what else could it be?
She's killed a bunch of things, right?
Yeah.
You're right, and I'm going from a traditional perspective of relationships where people like each other because of who they are and things they share in common, and, you know, not star-crossed lovers and that kind of prophetic things. Like,
yeah.
You know, they definitely are, they're destined to be together.
But, like, even that has not been said. Like, there's been plenty of opportunities to say, oh, they love each other because magic. And that actually hasn't been said, and there's been opportunities to say that because everything else is happening because magic and a prophecy and... you know, something. So why does he like her? There's no reason is given. And
I mean, why does anyone like anyone? They both like each other. This is just, we're just not used to it because in this series, most of the things are Xander liking someone and getting rejected.
Yeah.
And she just simply doesn't reject him and he doesn't reject her. He rejects Cordelia, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know. To me, it's not that complicated. I'm not sure.
It doesn't have to be complicated. But the acting is so bad, you can't tell what's really going on. Like, the motivations are totally masked to us because the guy who plays Angel is so stiff. You can't tell if it's just so flat response to everything. Even Buffy, who he's supposed to love, it's just like, gosh, Buffy, that was really close. You know, like, and he takes his shirt off or whatever. Like, everything feels so unmotivated for that character.
I agree.
Just take one second. So I have a couple random things. There's some quotes that made me laugh that I really enjoyed in this episode. I'm not going to do it justice, but that line when Willow's like, I never feel like I know anything. And, you know, it's like there's so many things that you know, Giles, I never know of. And Giles' like, did you stay up until 6 a.m. studying the stuff to find out about the warriors? She's like, no, I was sleeping.
Like, yeah, that's good.
That line is so charming. It's really charming. It's great.
That is charming.
And then I love the line from Xander when they're at the bronze before it gets fumigated. And he's making fun of Willow and Xander because they're just so tuned out of the party zone at the bronze. He says, like, let's stop this crazy whirly gig of fun. It's just a stupid line, but, like, it made me laugh. I watched this twice, and those ones both made me laugh.
Good stupid Xander line. How could you love an umpire? That makes me laugh every time.
I was going to bring that up.
Every
time. The master quotes Spider-Man for some reason.
I noticed that too. Or I guess quotes Uncle Ben. I don't know.
Yeah.
What does he quote? What was the
he
quote?
He says, with power comes responsibility.
Yeah.
He doesn't add the great to make
it. Yeah, it's a weird paraphrase of Uncle Ben just dropped in there strangely.
Yeah.
Also, a strange missed opportunity is that the master says, see how we all work together for the common good. He totally should have said something like, see how we all work together for the common evil. I feel like it's a real missed opportunity for a joke there.
Yeah, maybe in later seasons. Because I'm evil. I had a bunch more notes about different kind of Nosferatu vampires, and I was going to talk about Czech New Wave Cinema for a minute, but I don't...
Yeah, just run it through as a monologue.
I just made a list of other Nosferatu vampires, and one of the better ones is from Valerie in her Week of Wonders. It's a he looks like a vampire. It's never exactly explained what he is. He's called the Weasel, but he's played by Peter Kopriva. And it's like I also wanted to talk about the other species of Romulans that we see in Star Trek Nemesis.
The Remans?
That are like the first time we ever see them, but they look like the Nosferatu.
They do, also. But fuck that movie.
Fuck that movie, except that the clone of Picard is Tom Hardy for some weird reason.
Yeah, fuck that movie.
What movie are you talking
about?
That's
the worst movie. You saw it with me. It was awful.
It is terrible, but I will say that the other Romulans looked cool. But it's, that was such an upsetting movie to watch. Ugh.
Which Star Trek movie?
Nemesis.
Is it?
It's the last of the Next Generation movies, and it really ends the Next Gen series.
Tom Hardy was in an...
Oh,
Tom
it's
Hardy
the
was
worst. Don't even bother.
Such a bummer, man.
It's depressing how bad that movie is.
Was the clone of Picard in a starship all by himself driving somewhere for 3 hours?
That would be better. I'd watch that.
Tom Hardy made a movie with him just in a fucking car answering like emails. No, he was answering phone calls, I think.
Another good quote from this episode. Closed for filing. I appreciated that. That was funny. Yeah, yeah. I liked that. That made me laugh every time.
Come back later. Closed for filing.
Angel says, like, I can walk like a man. And every time I go, walk like a man. that's not very interesting, but that's in my notes.
That fits under random perfectly.
Yeah.
So
can I do my rant about how I like the episode?
Oh yeah, so let's go into the overall review. So yes, Travis, please tell us.
I know I'm the one who's most enthusiastic about these, but
it's great. Someone has to be.
So for me, the episode, as I said before, extremely well paced episode with a great amount of action, very little just exposition, like the library scene. There is a couple boring library scenes, but they're very short and they have a lot of. Comedy in them. There's a lot of great lines from Giles or Willow, or great physical gags with the pencil and stabbing. So we fill in a lot about Angel's past in this episode. And it's action-packed in the sense that Darla dies and Joyce is also attacked. So that's like a kind of a double whammy. And I think overall, I think a lot of things are fleshed out in this episode that really aren't fleshed out before. I think overall, this is the best episode of the first season. Now, we haven't talked, there's still several episodes yet we haven't seen, but in my opinion, this is the best episode of the first season because of not only the amount of action, the quality of the action, what happens, we find out more information. And I think, this is the first kiss between Buffy and Angel. You know, I don't think Angel's acting in the bronze scene is all that bad. It's a bit strange. To me, the most sexual part of this episode is in the bronze, when Buffy's walking up to Angel with her neck, like, vulnerable. To me, that was the most sexual part of the season so far. The most sexual vampire type thing. So, I mean, this has got a lot of different strange things in it. And so overall, this is best episode first season for me.
This was a fun episode to watch. I did watch it twice because I couldn't believe the things that were happening. Because the events, just one as they led to another, did not make sense. So, like, it was a bit hard to follow, even. Like, Darla being killed was a surprise. There was so much Angel backstory getting dropped, I had to rewatch just to understand what was being said and take good notes. Like, he's how old? Budapest? Earthquake? Kimonos? What is going on in these scenes? I felt like there was a lot of important non-filler content in this episode as it relates to the larger universe. It was fun to see the three just get murdered right away. It was fun despite maybe what wasn't meaning to be as fun as it was. Just the disposableness of their characters and ideas in this storyline. But I mean, I also know the Buffy structure pretty well now, set up and then the conclusion is if nothing happened. And so, you know, I kind of understand what I'm going to get. So this was fun to watch, and I you know, I'm looking forward to watching the next one now that this formula is so dialed in, and it's interesting to see how it's tweaked, you know, where you do, like, in a totally, like, just intellectually detached way. It is fun to watch this show now because of we get to talk about it, and this formula is interesting. So I'm enjoying the show despite the show's attempts to make me not enjoy it, and it's been fun. So this is a good episode, but maybe I'm so detached now because I've watched so many of these and talked about them afterwards that I can't even gauge whether or not they're fun. I'm not, like, in touch with my natural instincts about these programs anymore. Like, I'm in touch with a different person's instincts. Like, this is fun to watch now, but not as a show. It's like it's a social commentary. It's conversations with friends. I mean, now it's great.
Would you turned it off to bring back an old question?
Probably as soon as the three appear, because there's these skinheads, and you're like, that could be the three. And then they appear, and it's Mad Max characters? Like, oh, this is terrible.
There are people with long hair, Michael.
Or when Angel sleeps over and stays, sleeps on the floor, even though he's injured. Like, yeah, that probably then, too. That's silly.
He slept in worse places.
That's true. He did say that. What's your review?
I'm assuming you're talking to me. For me, this episode is fine. I don't hate it. I really don't like it that much. I think it's necessary to establish things that are important, right? But to me, this episode is actually, it's one great big library scene for the rest of Buffy. You know, we established some things about Angel. We established some things about how vampires work. I actually didn't find any of it compelling. Didn't really care. I mean, and maybe it's because I've seen it before, and it's so old hat to me because I've seen it so many times before. And right for me right now, it's way more interesting to go back and watch the one-shot episodes that maybe I don't remember as well. But right now, this episode just feels very, very just like this is the background of Buffy, right? This is how vampires work. And, you know, Buffy feels this way. Angel is like that. Giles explains some things. It just feels very much like this is like Buffy without any flavor on it. It's just sort of plain Buffy.
Dennis, please tell us how you feel.
Yeah, I think I agree more with Travis than with the rest of you guys about this episode. When I was in college, I took a English class that was like a horror English class. And this was the episode of Buffy that the instructor, whose name I totally forgot, and she was a really good instructor, so I wish I remembered her name. But this is the episode she chose to pick because it is an early episode. And to go to John's thing about, like, this episode feels like setup for the rest of the series. And I think it's impressive that he's totally right. This episode is set up for, like, not only the rest of the series, but Angel also. And it's not a big library scene. That a lot of this information is being given to us outside the library, but, like, in the Bronze during fight scenes and stuff. So I think that the way they handle, like, what is, like, yeah, 8 seasons of info dump in, like, a, like, quick, entertaining way works really well. And I think it's not only a setup for Buffy and Angel, but, like, setup for, like, Twilight and Underworld. They stole so much from this episode. I think it's a totally solid episode. I think this is the very first time that Angel is, like, an interesting character, because it's the first time we really find out about him. And I think it's the first, I don't know, I think Buffy is really likable in this episode. I think this is a really solid episode. But I just remembered I wanted to tell you guys a story.
Yeah, we want to hear a story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the other night, it's like 10:30, so I live in this, like, really small town that's also, like, really touristy. So the other night at, like, 10:30, I'm walking my dog, and, like, there's nobody I'm on Main Street, and there's nobody on the street. So I, like, decide I need to hawk a loogie right then. I'm like, it's totally empty. So I don't usually spit on sidewalks, but I figure I'm going to get away with this. So I hawk the loogie. And as I'm doing it, a party walks out of this fancy restaurant, and they, like, all make eye contact with me. And who, like, makes eye contact with me and says hi, and I say hi back, is Scott Wolf from Party of Five. So that's my story. That's my 90s story.
I think that's making the edit, good. Definitely.
Wait, is that the 1990s?
The 1990s, in fact. So Scott Wolf looks pretty good. He looks like he's aging well. He's got really great skin.
I would not have recognized that person.
I totally recognized him immediately, and I was like, how do I even know his name? Like,
yeah, that's weird. You didn't even watch that show, did you?
No, I didn't, but it was there. It was definitely there.
Huh.
He's also shorter than me, which is pretty interesting.
So wait, Mike, question. During at the end of that story, Travis dropped in that little 1990s, in point of fact, reference to an earlier Buffy episode. How does it feel to now get those?
Well, I feel like it's fun, but also Travis's references are so unpredictable and crazy. It only gives me access to a small percentage of the references overall. Travis, you referenced something crazy when we went out for lunch earlier. What was the joke? You referenced some other show. What was it?
Really?
Yeah. Do you not remember this? You had some weird reference when we were parking the car, and you said some of the joke, and then I was like, what? And then you said the name of a show I hadn't seen, and what was it?
Well, earlier during this podcast, Travis made a really funny reference to, like, what, season 3 of Angel or something?
Yeah, of course I did. Oh, this is my perfect time. Well, Mike remembers that. Remember, Mike, when I was going all crazy about the episode Never Kill a Boy in the First Date, I'm like, oh, there's this amazing thing that happens and I can't talk about. And then I tried to talk about, but when Buffy is in they're all in the Bronze, Angel, Buffy, Xander, Willow, and Owen, of course, Buffy goes, bite me. And then the camera cuts to Angel, and Angel's mouth moves ever so slightly, which I think is by accident, but it actually works really well. I think he just did that accident. And they cut back to Buffy. And there's all these little clues. He's a vampire, and boom, they said, bite me. I don't know. And Mike didn't get it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you?
You had a Bones reference.
How surprised were you? On a scale of 1 to 10, that Angel was a vampire.
I was too surprised.
I'm very proud I had a Bones reference. I can't remember now, but I'm proud of that.
Yeah, you had a Bones reference. I haven't seen Bones, and it's probably just because, the Angel's in Bones, right? So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also the good, what's Bones' name? She's the good sister of the two sisters that are actresses. Yeah, she's the good, it's got the good Deschanel.
Okay, so.
What? She's the good Deschanel.
So Travis did have a good point before we started the podcast, which is that we are watching a thing that he cares deeply about, or I'm watching something he cares deeply about that I have never cared less about. But now I have to care about. Like, I'm engaged, I'm watching it, we're caring about it. And he says, this must be, I'm trying to mention something you like, Michael, that I couldn't care less about, and I can't, but I that's got to be terrible for you sometimes to have to do this. So at some point, I need to introduce something that, you know, Travis hasn't seen. Maybe you guys can have seen it.
There's a lot Travis hasn't seen, right?
Yeah. I watch the same thing over and over again, so
yeah.
There's plenty.
That's when I describe the show to people, I'm like, and one friend who is, like, deeply into Buffy lore, but basically hasn't watched anything but Buffy and Angel for the last 20 years.
That's who this show is really about. I haven't seen this show, but one person is obsessed with the show and driving the existence of this podcast more than anyone else.
So, I mean, what would that be? I mean, like, Travis, have you seen Before Sunrise, Travis?
No. Oh, yeah, that's
exactly
it.
What I brought up.
I don't care about that.
The Sunrise series.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I don't know. That feels like that would be torture now.
Yeah. I mean, it's torture for me now.
I think there's something that you've seen, Mike, that you really like that I'm like, okay. There's plenty of things that you and I have seen.
I feel like, Mike, you've got a lot of weird, like, anime interests, or at least you used to.
You know what, John? What if we expose people to some bad movies?
Oh, yeah.
Like, our style of bad films.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know if Travis had the patience to watch some of these poorly produced films, which to me are the ultimate comedy.
I gotta be honest, like, Mike.
What if we do a podcast where we just watch the same 5 episodes of Golden Boy for 4 years?
What if we fast forward through Clerks for the naked scenes?
Gosh, then it really would be the 90s.
The 1990s.
The 1990s, yeah.
So wait, shit, what was I gonna say? I forget.
Do you want to, do you want to just finish the podcast, do like an outro? Mike's got an outro. And then we'll just talk chat.
Yeah, that's...
Oh, sure.
And he can edit this out.
That way we don't have to record all this and then go dig through it later.
I assume the podcast had ended.
That was the Angel episode of Buffy. Thank you, everybody, for spending time with us to chat about it. The next episode is iRobot Eugene, which will have aired April 28th, 1997, episode 8. Buffy Vampire Slayer. So, thanks very much. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. Reach out to us at BuffyVirgin.com in the comments section to talk more about Buffy. Yeah, anyway, thanks so much. Have a great week.